This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a unique situation with the story of World War II veteran Bill Cott, a survivor of the Battle of the Bulge, witness to evidence of the Holocaust at Buchenwald, later a dentist and oral surgeon. In fact, he continued to perform oral surgery until the age of 89. Bill passed away this week at the age of 97, just 8 days after recording this interview. And we would not have had the opportunity to meet Dr. Cott if I hadn't been clued into his story. Almost all the veterans we hear from on this program are people we meet because of you, the listener, passing along a recommendation. In this case, about a year ago, Dr. Cott received a heart valve replacement manufactured by Edwards Life Sciences, a company that holds an annual ceremony in Orange County around Veterans Day to honor all the vets who have benefited from those heart valves. Dr. Cott was one of those honored this past November, and I want to thank Heather from Edwards Life Sciences for connecting me to Dr. Cott and his family. You're going to hear from his son, Paul, before we're done. But to catch up to where we were with Dr. Cott, he had excelled at Central High School in Philadelphia, a magnet school that goes back to 1836 and is the second oldest continuously used high school in the country. He had joined the Army Specialized Training Program and studied at both the Citadel and the University of Maine, where he met his future wife, Eleanor. But when troops were needed in Europe, he was sent there to become part of General George S. Patton's Third Army. One of the questions I asked him was, what was the most difficult or challenging thing he had to deal with in World War II?
The most challenging, difficult for me was killing people. But that's what I had to do. That's why I was there. I don't like that.
And did you ever meet Patton? Were you ever
around him? Yeah, we met him. He come out and talked to us. I don't have one, but there are pictures of him peeing in the Rhine River. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Uh-huh.
Have you?
Yeah, and it was interesting that he did that. At least he said he did that because he thought he was the reincarnation of Julius Caesar and Napoleon, who had both done the same thing.
Oh, yeah. And he's right. I think that guy won the war.
I've talked to quite a few guys who served under him, and to some, his bravado was very inspirational. I've also heard the other side where some guys said, yeah, old blood and guts, our blood, his guts, and they felt that they were the price that he was willing to pay. What did you get out of him being the leader of that Third Army?
The thing is, you're expressing the feeling of today. Young people in particular, and through the years, they get insulted if you're a little bit bravado. But you're in the Army. You got a war going. You can't always be a nice Joe. I mean, what the hell do they expect? You know, you got to be forceful to win a war. And that's what he was. And that's what he did.
How often did you hear from Eleanor?
Occasional. Not too much, because it was difficult to get mail under those circumstances. But when the war was over in Europe, and I emphasize in Europe, after we left Buchenwald, the war wasn't over. Everybody thinks the war was over. It wasn't. We were still fighting the Japanese. So Eisenhower came over and talked with Patton. He wanted 200 soldiers to spearhead the invasion of Japan, 200 of his best soldiers. Unfortunately, I was one of them. I didn't like that. We were all tired. So we went to Japan. And in the meantime, Roosevelt died. Truman became president, and he dropped a bomb on Hiroshima August the 6th, 1945. Remember that for the next exam. They didn't give up. We were on a boat going down.
You were on your way to Japan when the bomb was dropped.
Uh-huh. And then the next thing, we were already there, really. He dropped another bomb August the 9th, 3 days later, on Nagasaki, and they gave up then. Nagasaki was just leveled. Oh, there were a few tree stumps and so on, but anyway. So what they did is they wouldn't let us go out into the radiated areas. So we just waited until we got discharged, and I'll tell you about that later if you want.
Well, there's a couple other things I need to circle back on with you, I think, because earlier you said after you were done in Belgium and after the bulge was repelled that you went into Germany, and you said, I'll tell you about that later. Sounded like you had something in mind about your experiences in Germany.
Well, we crossed the Rhine. The Rhine River separates Belgium from Germany, as it does France from Germany, south. We made our first stop, Luxembourg. Nice antiques, trolley cars, everything was good, and I spoke with them. Then we went south and eastward into Bavaria. Every large city, as I understand it, in Germany has a gymnasium, several stories. I forgot the name of this one, but there was a guy up on a balcony when I came over. I was more or less alone at that time, but I had my finger ready to go. He looked wounded, and I just couldn't shoot him. You know, they all had large cans of lard for food. He had one, and I just let him alone and left. And we went on to Buchenwald. See, there was always a contest between Patton and Montgomery, the British guy with the sweater. We were the first ones to come into Buchenwald. Bodies all over the ground. Well, not really bodies, just skeletons. Skeletons all over the ground. The Germans were afraid of us. They didn't want to be confronted by us. They all took off, the German soldiers. We went in there and saw the ovens. There was two ovens in the shower room. People would say to me, there was no such thing. Well, I saw them. German ladies from our church were telling me there were no such thing. I said, that's baloney. I saw them. We were there about a week and cleaned things up and cages where people would sleep. I don't know where they got the idea. Treat people like animals like that. And by the way, we walked. This was all walking across Germany. Suddenly, about 3 days later, Eisenhower cut our supplies off, our gasoline, and so on. And we didn't know what was happening. So we found out later that the problem, if you remember your history, there were two treaties with Roosevelt, Stalin, and Churchill. And then the next one was with Truman. They made a rule that you don't go past the German border. So, but Patton did, and he was right to do that. We all were for him because what he was doing was he was going after Stalin. He hated Stalin. Oh, it was amazing. In fact, I think the Russians killed him on the Autobahn. I really do. I don't think that he was in an accident. I think he was killed. And so did everybody else, not only me. But it came out it was an accident.
So Patton had you guys pressing on toward the Soviet forces.
So right.
But Eisenhower had your supplies cut off, so you couldn't go that way.
Yeah. So then we went back to Germany. We marched back there. Next thing we knew, Eisenhower came out. We went to Japan. At least I did, along with 200 others. Then I was discharged at San Luis Obispo.
And you've been in California ever since?
Yes. I stayed here ever since. And my wife was waiting for me there. She knew I was there. We were married at Vermont and Exposition. And that's about it.
Well, let me take you back to a couple things that I want to understand. You mentioned going to Buchenwald. And you even mentioned that in the years since, you've had people tell you how that never happened. And you said, I know it did because I was there. Before you got there, had you heard anything about what the Germans were doing to the Jewish people and other political prisoners? You were aware.
Oh, sure. We all knew it.
I just became aware of this recently because my grandfather was part of the liberation of Buchenwald, as I shared with you. There's an effort right now to put a memorial at Buchenwald honoring the liberators, the American liberators of that concentration camp. But because that was under the Iron Curtain and there's still that old socialist East German legacy, there's this version of the history there that says, no, the Americans didn't liberate the camp. It was the Polish communists inside the camp who liberated themselves.
No,
do you have any opinion on that?
Sure, I do. No, we liberated it. The reason the German guards left, because they knew we were coming. We liberated that camp, not Polish communists.
You know, when you talked about being at Buchenwald and you mentioned the people who have questioned that, I get the sense that it's important to you that the truth be known, that what you saw be remembered, and that history be recorded. So can you help us understand some of the things you saw, even those things that maybe aren't easy to talk about?
Of course. The first things we saw were these skeletons scattered all over. It was terrible. Then there was a basement, or a cellar, I guess, and they had chains where people were hung up by their arms in there. And then, of course, the ovens and the showers. Those were all outstanding things in my mind that I can't ever forget. And I have pictures of some of that. They had towers and so on.
And I know it was a long time ago. In fact, 75 years ago, right around your birthday, it'll be the 75th anniversary of that liberation. So I know it's a long time ago, but do you remember how that struck you, how a young man processed such horrific circumstances and scenes?
Yes, I do. I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that they devised things like that for other humans. It was unbelievable to me. Yes, it wasn't something I just sloughed off. I just couldn't believe what I saw, but that's the way it was.
Well, thank you for your willingness to talk about that. I know it can't be easy. And, you know, you mentioned earlier when I asked you about close calls, you said, yeah, sure, I had close calls. I'm curious, though, about your state of mind, because here you are a world away from where you grew up and everything you've ever known, and you're dealing with the worst winter ever and an enemy that wants to kill you.
Sure.
Were you scared? Were you frightened?
Sure. Sure, I was scared, and I expected to be killed. I didn't expect to come home. I didn't know, of course, but guess God had other plans for me. But sure, I was scared. We're all scared. It's something you don't get over easily.
And I understand it's something that you didn't talk about for a long time.
Yeah, they didn't know anything about this until recent years.
Your family had no idea?
Well, Eleanor might have, but I never talked to them. They never do.
And I'm interested, too. So you go through all of this in Europe. You survive the Battle of Bulge, where thousands of Americans were killed. You witness the worst of humanity at Buchenwald. Germany surrenders, but you still have to head to Japan. You're thinking you're going to be part of a spearhead, which means you're probably going to be killed there in this invasion.
Oh, Eisenhower told us that the 200 will be dead the first day. He told us that.
And they estimated American casualties could have been around 1 million had they invaded Japan. So then when Imperial Japan surrendered, was that a relief to you?
Oh, sure. Of course, it was a big relief. We were surprised because they don't give up, but they did. The general came in and took over the administration of Japan. What was his name?
MacArthur.
MacArthur. This guy knows the history. MacArthur. Remember that on the exam. MacArthur did a good job administering Japan and putting things back together.
So when you came home, you had a fresh start? You could put all this behind you? Or what was your state of mind at that point?
Well, state of mind was, how do I make a living? I'm 23. I was in 4 years. So I talked it over with Eleanor, and we decided to take advantage of the GI Bill. Well, it started at Compton. Eventually went to the dental school. They had 3,000 applications. They only take 100. I knew the grades were important, so I concentrated on that, and I was lucky to get in.
And that worked out all right for you?
Well, I think so, but I had to have the permission of my wife because, as you know, you can't just leave. But she worked. She had a nice job.
So you become a dentist. And then you got bored? You decided you needed to do more?
No, I wasn't bored. I just felt I wanted to learn some more. But I had to work for it. It didn't just come easy.
And you went back to school to become an oral surgeon?
Oh, yeah. I went to San Francisco. I was there for 3 years. I became an oral surgeon.
And you were an expert on the jaw, from what I understand, the mandible?
I don't know if I was an expert, but I think what's missing today is common sense. People don't have common sense.
So you're a practicing dentist. You go back to school to become an oral surgeon. And then even after that, you decided, I want to be a regular medical doctor. Where did that come from?
Well, again, I wanted to advance myself, and I was willing to work. I didn't just stop. I worked weekends, Saturdays and Sundays. I worked 7 days a week, which people don't do today. They want to have fun. You look at the television, They're either drinking, laughing, or something. I don't know what the hell they're doing.
Not Dr. Cott recommended?
No. Not if you want to get ahead. People want the money. They want to get ahead. But you can't do it if you don't work for it. They don't want to work and still get the money.
So you had to be one of the oldest medical students ever, I'm guessing.
I was. I was 60 years old.
And I'm curious, as I think about that and all the work and the time you had to invest in those goals of becoming a dentist and then an oral surgeon and then a medical doctor, was any of your experience in the war and the perspective that gave you, did that influence any of those decisions or how you lived after the war?
I don't know. I think what influenced me the most was my childhood. I just felt I should do something to secure myself. I didn't hear from one family member during the war. Nobody wrote to me. I didn't have any family. My mother had five brothers and sisters. None of them wrote to me. It means a lot to me to have four great-grandchildren, too.
Well, I don't want to leave out anything that's important. And if there's anything else that you want to insert, let me know. I understand in recent years, as you've talked about this more, you've had some opportunities to meet the family of one of the Buchenwald survivors that you helped liberate, that you've been to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., that you've even met Steven Spielberg with his Shoah Foundation documenting the Holocaust. What have some of those experiences been like for you?
We got memories. That's the whole bottom line of all this stuff is memories. It was quite a deal.
Well, it may seem obvious or intuitive or that it doesn't need to be said, but I'd like to hear it in your words, in your perspective. Why is it important that the story of Buchenwald and the other concentration camps and the Holocaust be told? Why do you think that's important?
First of all, I think that all of history is important because you know what the country is all about. For example, this idea of taking down statues of the pre-bellum years, that's part of history. You don't remove that. That doesn't change anything. So I think that this should be known also for future, that you can't allow people like Hitler and Mussolini to progress to the status that they had.
So if we're ignorant of the facts, even the painful facts that you saw firsthand, we're in danger of history repeating itself?
Well, certainly. If people don't know what they're doing, which they don't know many times today, especially, people don't know what they're doing. It could repeat itself. That's how you live the present. See, if you know history, you know what happened, and you could adjust your thinking and your goals and what you like to do today. History is a very good subject. I recommend people should learn history, but that's how you learn what's going on today, by the things of the past.
Well, like I said, I don't want to leave anything out, but I also don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for giving us a glimpse of history and sharing your perspective with us. I do have one more question for you. 97 and a half years old, is there something that you would say you're most proud of or most thankful for?
I'm most thankful to God for allowing me to live this long, because I have had a good life, irrespective of all these things. I've been in good health, except till now. Also, one should be very careful of diet. Try to eat things that come out of the ground, fruits, vegetables, low meat, not too much. You don't have to eliminate it, but just follow a reasonable diet. You have a glass of wine a day, it's all right, but you are what you eat. If you eat garbage, well, that's the way it'll turn out. In general, for a good life, you have to eat well.
Doctor's orders, huh?
Well, that's what I feel.
So here's my last thing. Thank you for being so generous with your time. And if you don't want to answer, don't. But when I think about your son sitting right here, grandkids and now great-grandkids, and the fact that none of them would have existed if you didn't make it back from World War II, I'm wondering if there's one situation that more than any other you look back on and say, that could have been it for me, and I'm really thankful it wasn't.
That's hard to say. Could have been any time. Bullets going around, and you had to be very careful. You know, you don't know. might be in the back of you, and you don't know what happened. That's a hard one to answer. I don't think that that's very helpful or useful for our conversation. So what? Whatever incident it was, it didn't happen. So why even talk about it?
That's the way he felt, and perhaps that focus was a big part of his inspirational life story. It's time for another break, but when we come back, we'll talk to one of those people who he inspired the most, his son, Paul. I know it's a little different feel today with that news that this remarkable World War II veteran, Dr. Bill Cott, who we sat down to record with just over a week ago, passed away January 8th at the age of 97. I'm very thankful we had that privilege before it was too late. Please keep the Cott family in your prayers as they all reflect on the life he led, the impact he had, and the emotions all of that produces. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.